Good afternoon. You are tuned in to CITR 11.9 FM, possibly logged in onto CITR.ca. My name is Andy Resto, and this show is called The Burrow. First human voice you're hearing in a while. Unfortunately, Chris Horrific was not in today to do the parts unknown. I'm sure he will be back next week to give you a great mix of quick and dirty punk songs. Anyhow, started off the show with a band from Victoria called The Back Homes. Serves multiple purposes here for me today. Gets me settled in. I can get everything ready as it's playing. And I needed something to set a tone for the show this week. And The Back Homes could... One may aptly describe them as the Canadian Moon Duo. And the Moon Duo, a band from San Francisco, rock and roll band from San Francisco originally, now located in Portland, were in town this weekend, played at the Biltmore with Craft Spells, and I did an interview with one half of the band, Sana Yamada, who plays keyboards and sings in the band. And so this week, majority of this episode will be taking up with that interview that I did on Friday. So, no more rambling from me. Well, there'll be some more rambling, but it will be more worth your while. Stay tuned and enjoy this interview with Sana Yamada of the Moon Duo here on CITR 11.9 FM, The Burrow. Here at the Biltmore Cabaret, getting ready to see a rock and roll band from San Francisco called the Moon Duo. And I am here with one half of the Moon Duo. How are you doing? If you want to introduce yourself real fast.
I'm Sana Yamada, and I'm doing well, thanks.
Cool. You guys have been on a long tour, you're saying, winding up at this time. How's everything been?
It's been good. We've been on the road for just over a full month. We've done a giant loop of the United States and Southern Canada, and it's been great. There's always ups and downs when you're in a car every day for 30 days. The shows have been really fun. We've had some really great times, met some great people, and I can't complain.
Has the whole thing been with Craft Spells, or is
no?
It okay.
No, we played with various bands
okay.
at different places. We didn't really. I don't think we had any repeat shows with anybody on this one.
Hmm. Cool. So, I assume the tour is mainly not a promotional tour, but a tour based around the new album, Shadow and Sun. So this is your third full-length LP and a couple EPs before that. You want to tell me how Moon Duo came about? I know it's Ripley.
Yeah.
It was from Wooden Ships originally.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering maybe how, what the impulse was to form Moon Duo.
Sure. Well, Ripley had Wooden Ships for a couple of years, and they... Our four guys, you know, they all have, one guy has a family, a couple guys have pretty full-time jobs, and Ripley was actually working full-time for a while, for a long while, and the ship started getting all these opportunities that they weren't able to take full advantage of because it was really hard to schedule everybody's lives. Getting enough time off to go travel with the band. And then Ripley actually got laid off from his job in the downturn in 2000. I guess that was 2007 that he got laid off. And so all of a sudden he had all this time for music. And I was a teacher, actually, at the time, and so he said, you know, we should start a band. And
forget teaching. Let's.
Well, for a while it was just sort of on the side, and then eventually we actually started getting some more opportunities than I was expecting, anyway. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of took the plunge, and we left San Francisco, and I left my job, and we took the show on the road.
Cool. What did you teach?
I taught English literature.
Okay, all right. That's nice. What is, and what level was that, actually?
It was junior high, middle school, like 14-year-olds.
How is that? How is doing teaching 14-year-olds? I would imagine.
Well, it was never dull.
Yeah, many times disinterested in what's going on.
It was fun. I mean, I think adolescents have a fairly unpleasant reputation just in society in general, but if you can catch their attention, they're actually very engaging people, and they're really interesting to be around because they're encountering a lot of ideas for the first time, especially ideas about counterculture or anti-authoritarian stances, or just the fact that, you know, everything you've been told as a child is not necessarily what you're going to believe yourself as an adult. So it's an interesting time in people's lives, and there was a lot I really enjoyed about it.
Right. Cool. So, like you said, you guys formed in San Francisco. Were there any bands that you were a part of prior to Mundo?
Me, no. I actually, I was really into writing for a while. I was trying to write fiction and getting frustrated because I didn't have, with the teaching, found it really hard to carve out the mental space and time to work on fiction. And that was actually one of the great things about starting the band. I'd played music as a kid and had sort of let it go for a while, but Ripley, when he talked about starting the band, was like, look, you're not, you know, the writing isn't making you happy, why don't you try something else for a while? And, it was
So I imagine there is at least some sort of scene in San Francisco that is similar to the music you guys make, kind of, I don't know, psychedelic rock and you know, in a way, post-punk music. Are there any bands that you'd like to that you think deserve a little bit of airtime, maybe, or who have come and gone that are, you know, really great and didn't quite get the recognition that they deserve that you can remember in San Francisco?
Well, there's some really great active musicians in San Francisco, and I mean, I think there was this band called Drunk Horse, which was a great band, and I feel like there wasn't necessarily like a psychedelic scene per se when I was living there, as much as there were just people doing interesting things. And Drunk Horse was one of those bands, but some of the guys from that band are now in a band called Once in Future Band, who we actually just played with in San Francisco, and they're fantastic. And I mean, a lot of the bands that I liked in San Francisco, I feel like have actually gotten some really great attention, like the OCs and Carlton Melton and Ty Segall. And a lot of those people have actually left San Francisco now, sadly, because it's so expensive. But I feel like there was and continues to be a pretty rich music making scene in Oakland. And I think a lot of those projects aren't really trying to, you know, break out necessarily, but
right.
are very interesting and worth listening to and
yeah.
worth catching.
Cool. Sounds very similar to here in many
yeah.
ways, that a lot of the bands, if they have the means to go anywhere, would like to leave, because it's very expensive, you know, living here and trying to maintain when you're not making as much money as you should be with your
yeah,
music, right?
Yeah, it's really hard in
yeah.
an expensive town.
Yeah.
Enjoy British Columbia's beautiful wilderness with the UBC Varsity Outdoors Club. Try your hand at hiking, backcountry skiing, rock climbing, kayaking, and much more. Whether you're a beginner or an expert, we have trips happening every week, usually at no cost. I'm just living my dream. Check us out online at ubc-voc.com.
Alrighty, so that was the Once in Future band from San Francisco, former members of, I always forget the band's name, but Sinai mentioned it in the interview. Anyhow, Once in Future band, and you're listening to The Burrow on CITR 1.9 FM. Here is more with Sinai Yamada from The Moon Duo.
And then you said you relocated. I know one of the albums that, is it Circles, was recorded in Berlin? Is that true?
It was mixed in Berlin.
Mixed in Berlin. Oh, okay.
Recorded. We tend to do a lot of our initial recording at home, and okay. We were sort of based in Colorado briefly, and that's where we worked on Circles.
Okay.
But we took it into Lucky Cat in San Francisco with Phil Manley from Trans Am, and he re-recorded a bunch of stuff for us and helped us kind of pull it all together, and then we mixed it in Berlin.
Cool. Did you ever tour with Kurt Vile, by the way? Is that...
We never toured with him, but we've crossed paths with Kurt and the Violators a number of times on the road, and they're such great people. We've kind of formed this friendship along the way.
There's a, if you know his latest album, there's a song, KV Crimes,
that references
your band. Now, every time that I see your guys' name, that little clip will run through my head.
That's great.
On holiday with the Moon Duo, Space Partners.
He said he wrote that after we played this festival together in Helsinki, and we were hanging out. Our green room on that festival was a giant old bus. It was like a 70s bus that was all tricked out inside, and we were hanging out with those guys on the 70s bus.
Yeah. And he mentions Club Mate in that lyric as well.
Yeah.
What are your opinions on Club Mate?
I love and adore Club Mate, and I wish it was more readily available in North America.
It's true. So it's huge in Germany. I lived there for a year.
Oh, did you?
And the first time I had it, I was like disgusted. I wanted to like spit it out. And then by the time I was leaving there, I was like addicted to it.
Yeah.
And
How can I take a case of this?
Yeah, exactly. That's the plan. So it has this weird like cult following when you...
Yeah.
When you actually look into it, there are these posters that are around Vancouver that literally just say Club Mate on it.
Oh,
it's like
really?
Super mysterious, and I don't know where
is
it's
it,
coming from.
Is
it's some
start
like group. I don't know. It's something like that. It's like bootlegging Club Mate or something.
Yeah. Speakeasy.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So, getting to the new album a bit, I wanted to first. I always touch upon this with artists, and I don't know if some people just kind of don't care, other people are super involved with the process, but do you guys do your album covers? Are you involved in the design at all?
Well, Ripley, or Mazes Ripley, worked with the house designer at Sacred Bones, and they did the maze design. But for Circles and Shadow of the Sun, those are both artists that we were sort of aware of and approached to see if they would be willing to do a cover. Circles is by a British artist called Will Sweeney. He does a lot of comic art and some skater type stuff. And then Shadow of the Sun is by a guy called Jay Shaw, and he does a lot of movie posters. I love his aesthetic. He's got this amazing like sci-fi. Trippy kind of vision. But we'd seen some of the posters that he had done for movies, especially this one, A Field in England, which I still haven't seen. It looks like a really bizarre flick. But the art was great, and then going to his website, he had all these incredible images. and we were looking for something kind of cinematic, so he seemed like a perfect fit for that.
Yeah, being that you're a literary mind, I would say, I'm going to tell you what it reminds me of,
okay.
And see what you think about it. So it's kind of like a Colossus figure with his head open up and this small little person coming out of it. Do you know Sigismund Kierkegaard-Novsky, who is this 20th century Russian author?
I just bought
that's crazy.
Book.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, he's great.
I haven't read it yet. I think it's called, Autobiography of a Corpse.
Yeah. So he mainly writes short stories, and it's like collections of those, because most of them were, you know, repressed and couldn't be published
yeah.
while he was writing. But in that collection, there's a story called In the Pupil.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is there's this woman who kind of falls in love with all these different men, you know, and there's a series of them. And as she's going through these love affairs, the men look into her eyes and see their reflection,
huh.
But the reflection in her eyes are actually small little people, like small versions of the men that she's falling in love with.
Oh, wow.
And so you're in the perspective of one of these little people, and as she ends up leaving all these men, they kind of get consumed into pretty much her gut, and they fall into her like stomach acids in a way.
Wow.
And so this guy falls in there, and there's about 12 or so that are inside this like stomach pretty much, and as they sit there longer, they become more like ephemeral and fading away, but they just retell their stories over and over again, go 1 through 12 and tell the stories of their affair or whatever
yeah.
happened to them.
That sounds
and so,
like a great story.
Yeah, yeah. It's, and so this, the one that you follow, he gets consumed and he's sitting under there, and then ends up planning this escape and jumps out of her eyeball and then finds his person, and he's telling the story to the person. So that's what it makes me think of, because it's on your cover, it's this little man coming out of someone's head.
Yeah.
But it's kind of an opposite message behind it, because in the story it seems like, you know, it's this soul consuming thing and then he's trying to escape it, whereas with a lot of your music and the cover, it seems like this mind freeing experience.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you'd like to touch on that at all.
That's a great observation, and that's definitely kind of a theme of recurrent fascination, certainly for me, and I think for Ripley too. We all have these selves that are composed of the body and whatever it is that animates the body that makes the difference between a living thing and a dead thing. I always feel like the thing, whatever force it is that's animating the body, is so much more than what the body is capable of expressing, that I feel like there's this certain impetus to always search for ways that the force behind the body can feel free, or feel realized, or feel unbound. And, you know, interestingly, a lot of times that happens through experiences of the body, like sensory experiences, whether it's psychedelic drugs or meditation or sex or whatever, you know, whatever releases people's sense of physical containment. But I think that there can be like musical or artistic explorations of that that drive, you know, that drive for release, and that's certainly something that plays a role in our music, or that we strive to, to incorporate or to express.
Yeah. I would say not in a negative sense as if it's music or something, but your music is very atmospheric and in the sense of like creating an atmosphere rather than just being background noise.
That's great.
And so what it does is it gives you time, I guess, while you're listening to just experience that. And it's very repetitive and the songs are long, so it gets you into that mood and into the zone, I guess, that the music is creating.
Yeah.
And I think that goes into what you were just speaking on. And about that, I want to ask how you feel about the new album. The tone it seems to set for me is that it's cold in a sense, not cold as in like empty, but cold as it's just, I imagine, like sleet, like a gray slate of sky or something, very like chill, like I don't know, like crisp music or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, as opposed to Circles, which I think is very you know, it's about the outdoors and the woods or something, is how I feel when I listen.
Yeah,
to
that's I agree with both those observations.
Yeah.
Or that's how they feel to me, and that's how I think those two types of ambiance were very much a part of the creation of those two records.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And along with that, as I was saying, when you listen to the songs, you kind of can escape for a while. You can zone out for a bit or whatever. You can start to notice the minutiae of the songs and small
mm-hmm.
things that are going on. One of my favorite parts of the new album is on In a Cloud. There's this noise that's going on in the background throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which when I heard it at first, it was just like, I don't know why, but it's so jarring to hear it. I think it's really great. It's like this, what I think it sounds like is like when you close your eyes or like clench your jaw and hear the blood rushing in your ears.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like. And it's just like pausing over and over. I don't know what that is or what inspired you to put that in, because it seems as if you had the song and then you just added that part into it, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, actually, that was something that the guy, we mixed Shadow of the Sun in Berlin as well with the same guy with whom we did Circles, Jonas Verweinen. And that was something that we added with him in the mixing process. Because that song, we were trying to change the sonic dynamics of a little bit and give it I think we wanted to give it an undercurrent, a little bit more sinister undercurrent than it had before. Something that, because it's a very soft song in a lot of ways, and it's a very, and it's, I think, a more emotional song than a lot of our songs tend to be, or more outright, forthrightedly emotional, I guess. But it needed something. It needed a little bit of edge, and that was Jonas found this sound. It's a manipulation of one of the beats, actually.
Oh. Thank you.
is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it. Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Parts Unknown!
Break your fingers!
So how does the songwriting process work between you two? Is it like a music lyrics thing, or is it completely
Ripley likes to go away. He is point A of the songwriting process, and he likes to go away to some random motel or something, and
okay.
He'll come back a few days later and he'll have like the skeletal structure of a bunch of songs, and
yeah.
Then he'll create like a basic beat track just with a drum machine, and then a basic rhythm guitar, and then he hands that to me, and I work on the bass line with the keys, and then a bunch of keyboard textures to give it sort of body. And a lot of times I'll add like a counter melody or like a melody line on the keyboard to kind of be in conversation with the guitar line that he's put down. And then I usually give it back to him, and then he adds some guitar solos, and then he gives it back to me, and I'll add maybe a little key solo or some like synthy sound effects or like weird touches and flourishes.
Yeah.
That's generally how it goes. It's like a handing back and forth, and sometimes if we're stuck on something or if one of us doesn't know where to go, we'll jam it out for a little bit and see.
Has there been thought to expanding and getting a live drummer or anything like that?
Actually, we have a live drummer now. And
oh, okay.
If you're coming to the show, you'll see him tonight. He is from Vancouver, in fact.
Right, okay.
His name's John Jeffrey. And we met him in the summer of 2013, and he started touring with us then. And it was just a stroke of luck for us. He's a great drummer, and we have really good musical chemistry together, and we all get along as people, which helps enormously.
Yeah.
And John played on the new record. We brought him into the studio when we had studio time, and he put down the drum tracks.
Okay.
And a bunch of the percussive stuff that you hear.
Great. So I imagine after doing a long tour and just coming out with an album, there might be some downtime with the band, or are there thoughts of new material or anything like that in the near future?
Well, those thoughts are always out there. I think once you finish something, playing live is a different mindset, and
right.
I think the creative part of the brain is in the back room, like toiling away,
yeah.
waiting to come forward again. But we have a little bit of downtime. We have like a week off, and then we go to Europe for another month.
Oh.
And it's the rest of the year is sort of dotted with time off and other tours.
Yeah.
So I think we're gonna try, and I mean, I always wanna be working, even if I'm not working on something specific. Like whenever we go home, we have this great music room in our basement in Portland, and it's like it's such a good feeling to just go home and go down in the basement and be in that space and just play and work and see what comes out.
So you guys are living in Portland now.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I have a brother who lives in Oregon, but I've only been to Portland a couple of times, and always very sparingly. I've tried to see some of the famous things, like McLeod's Books, which is, you know, the huge bookstore there. It's is it McLeod's?
Powell's.
Or sorry, yeah, Powell's.
That's okay.
I was thinking of a different, yeah, Powell's. Are there any other spots in Portland that are, whatever they might be, bars, bookstores, cafes, anything?
Well, Powell's is a big one. We have this great neighborhood cafe and market called P's and Q's, and we basically live there. It's like 5 blocks from our house. I think I eat there at least once a week, if not more. And the food's fantastic. It's a great place to hang out. They have a great selection of little market sundries, and I would recommend that to anybody. And let's see, what are their favorites? There's a really great little sushi and sake place on Alberta Street, which is also kind of near our house, called Zilla Sake. And that's a real treat. Those are my two favorite places to eat, I think. And as far as other shops and things, Old Town Music is a really great instrument store. They have a huge selection of pedals, and it's a good place to go mess around and browse. And Forest Park is gorgeous and huge, with lots of trails and trees and sort of outdoor beauty in the city.
Nice. Have you ever been to Springfield, Oregon?
No.
Are you? Okay. do you know of Springfield?
Is that where your brother lives?
No, but do you know of Springfield, Oregon?
No,
that
I don't. Actually.
It's apparently Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons, grew up there, and apparently that's supposed to be the real Springfield.
That's
And he never has,
wow,
like,
never
admitted it, but everybody there has, like, this claim that they are Springfield, and they're making this huge Simpsons mural there now and everything. And there are all these hints in the show that it might actually be Springfield, Oregon.
Right.
But the point is that that kind of wackiness is kind of what Portland is famous for, and I don't know if you find that, or that makes it more comfortable to live there, that you find it's, accepting of kind of like alternative lifestyles, you know?
Yeah, oh, it definitely is. I think Portland kind of prides itself on that. And it's, I mean, it's not, coming from living in San Francisco, it didn't seem like so outre and it's, bizarreness, but I think that there's that same sort of West Coast attitude where whatever you're into, you can do it there, and nobody's going to really give you a hard time about it. But there are, people like to be wacky in specific ways sometimes in Portland. Like, I've stopped at stop signs before and had people on unicycles, unicycles cross the intersection.
It's an acquired skill, I'm sure.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
All right, great. Is there anything you wanted to say? Any shout-outs you wanted to make?
Yeah, actually, there's this one record that I just bought that is the greatest thing I've heard in a really, really long time. And it's kind of hard to come by, but if you can get your hands on one, do it. It's Doug Cream Blunt.
Doug Cream? Or
Cream, H-R-E-A-M.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a fantastic record. He's got some tunes up on YouTube you can find, but the whole thing is so groovy, so atmospheric, and so weird. Just, like, not weird in a really overt way, but full of these really idiosyncratic oddities that I just love it. I think it's the greatest thing.
Awesome. And is that from this year? Is that recent? Or
no, it's not. I think it was released a couple years ago. I don't know if he self-released it. I think he did. He is actually a San Francisco guy, which I didn't know. And I got it. I ordered it from Aquarius Records there, and they said that he just brings them copies when they run out. But yeah, that's my current obsession.
Awesome.
Power, shifting every hour.
So that was Doug Hream Blunt here on CITR 101.9 FM. This program is called The Burrow. That was by recommendation of Sanaa Yamada of the Moon Duo, who, if you have been tuned in for the last 54 minutes, I was able to do an interview with this weekend when they were in town at the Biltmore. Very good show. And thank you so much to Sanaa for doing that interview. It is much appreciated. And that Doug Hream Blunt album is very, very funky, but somehow a little bit jarring. It keeps you on your toes, keeps you a little bit unbalanced. There's something strange in there underlying it. And though it sounds like it may have been released in 1970, as far as what I've been able to dig up, it looks like it was released in 2010 on an album. It's an album called Gentle Persuasion. And the song I played was Fly Guy. So, again, thanks so much to Sanaa Yamada of Moon Duo for doing an interview with me. And to close out this week's episode, on Wednesday, there is going to be a record release show for a rock and roll band called Weed from here in Vancouver. Now, Hugo Noriega, the bassist of the band Weed, was on this show last week. I'll just, without my permission, I'm just going to say that and leave it at that. However, he did debut a song, the B-side of a single that was released called Turret. I'm just going to play the A-side to close out the show. It's called 1,000 Pounds. And this song, 1,000 Pounds, will be on their new LP that they're releasing this Wednesday at Antisocial Skateboard Shop here in Vancouver. It should be a good show. It's a nice early show, which is, I don't know, in my opinion, a very good thing. Should be over by 10:30. And a couple of mystery bands will be joining them. I hear that maybe one of the bands has Andrea Lukic from New Sensei in it, but I won't guarantee anything. Anyhow, thanks for tuning in. This has been The Burrow on CITR 101.9 FM, and this is 1,000 Pounds by Weed.